From Washington, D.C., across the nation and around the world, stand by for an overview of the hottest topics and people being discussed on air, online, at the coffee shop and across the backyard fence, powered by the research of Talkers Magazine, The National Conversation. It's time for the Michael Harrison Wrap. Here's Michael Harrison.
Thank you, Victoria Jones. Monday, February 1st through Friday, February 5th, 2021, it was another week of compelling political intrigue in the nation's capital as both parties regroup, rethink, and re-strategize their relationship with each other, with themselves, with their bases, with the nation, and with the world going forward in the face of next week's historically unprecedented Senate impeachment trial and the fork in the road at which the Republicans must choose between being the party of Trump or the party of a new post-Trump era. And while the COVID-19 pandemic remains a formidable enemy, the economy remains uncertain. We are censoring and censuring the hell out of each other, and the world beyond our borders seethes with unrest. On top of that, it's Super Bowl weekend, perhaps the only event that still provides a significant segment of the population with some type of common culture that binds us as a nation, busted up by an increasingly fractionalized media. Stand by, as we're about to be joined by media thought leaders with microphones, smartphones, and digital recording devices from New York, Las Vegas, Boston, Palm Beach, and Washington, D.C., sharing their observations and the feelings of their target constituents, with whom they do their daily dance of affirmation, all part of the deafeningly noisy world in which we try to avoid the modern-day syndrome of seeking victory at the expense of truth. Welcome to the Michael Harrison Wrap, an examination of the past week's hottest political and social topics discussed in the American talk media. Information's gathered from a variety of sources, including data tracked by the broadcasting trade publication Talkers Magazine, of which I'm editor and publisher. Joining us now is Kevin Casey, executive editor of Talkers Magazine. Kevin, give us a rundown of the 10 most talked about stories on talk shows in America this past week.
At number 10, countdown to the Super Bowl. After completing their regular 16-game schedule and an exciting postseason of playoffs under the challenging conditions imposed by the coronavirus pandemic, the NFL has arrived at its big Super Bowl weekend. The reigning champion Kansas City Chiefs will battle the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on Sunday evening amidst a ton of hoopla in a partially filled stadium stuffed with cardboard fans before a massive TV audience.
And it will be a Super Bowl with many interesting storylines, including the spectacle of quarterback Patrick Mahomes, the young phenom on one side, and Tom Brady, the old goat, meaning greatest of all time, on the other, a legacy battle for the ages.
At number 9, FBI agents killed. FBI special agents Daniel Alfin and Laura Schwarzenberger died in a shootout Tuesday. Three others were wounded, executing a federal search warrant at an apartment complex in Sunrise, Florida.
The agents were investigating a ring called Playpen, which has been described by authorities as a highly sophisticated global enterprise dedicated to the sexual exploitation of children, organized via a members-only website that operates on the dark web.
At number 8, the Newsom recall. The campaign to oust California Governor Gavin Newsom through the mechanism known as recall went from unlikely to extremely likely this week, reflecting growing impatience with his pandemic management that has cut sharply into his approval numbers. The longer businesses have remained closed, hospitals filled to capacity, and schools shut, the more the movement has gained traction beyond conservative social media circles.
Speaking of recall, if you recall, this process has already taken place in California, where back in 2003, Democratic Governor Gray Davis was recalled, which set the stage for the election of Republican Arnold Schwarzenegger as governor.
At number 7, U.S. foreign policy, including America's relations with China and Russia, tied with the Biden administration's response to the coup in Myanmar. In a wide-ranging speech that covered a number of global hotspots, President Biden announced, "America is back," on Thursday and declared that, quote, "diplomacy is back at the center," end quote, of U.S. foreign policy.
And the political unrest erupting in Russia over the arrest of Putin critic Alexei Navalny has sparked concerns that Vladimir Putin might instigate an international incident to distract attention from his growing problems at home.
At number 6 this week, climate change tied with immigration reform. presidential executive orders under Joe Biden reversing Trump administration policies pertaining to greenhouse gases and undocumented immigrants has opened a whole new chapter in the discussion of climate change and immigration reform in the national conversation.
The president has taken steps to preserve and fortify protections for Dreamers, end the Muslim and African ban, and halt border wall construction, in addition to creating a task force charged with reuniting families separated at the border.
At number five, the cable TV ratings war tied with social media censorship and the cancel culture. CNN came in at number one and MSNBC was number two, dropping longtime leader Fox News Channel to number three in the cable news talk TV ratings wars as conservative competitors Newsmax and OAN continue to nip at the Murdoch platform's heels. Meantime, the news talk media universe was abuzz this week in response to MyPillow chief Michael Lindell being shut down on Trump-friendly Newsmax TV for spouting debunked conspiracy theory information about voting machine fraud, rhetoric that has landed Fox and its commentators in the crosshairs of an extremely serious lawsuit.
Meantime, complaints in the conservative media that digital platforms such as Facebook and Twitter are inherently biased against right-of-center philosophy continues to grow louder as the discussion of censorship in America and freedom of speech takes center stage in the national conversation as expressed on talk shows on air, online, and on satellite.
At number four, a three-way tie between race relations, the Morgan Wallen racial slurs, and police reform. New York State lawmakers have introduced legislation that bans law enforcement officers from using chemical irritants on minors in response to Rochester, New York police pepper spraying and handcuffing a 9-year-old girl as they were responding to a call of a family disturbance this past week.
And rising country music star Morgan Wallen had to apologize for racial slurs in which he shouted profanities and the N-word as revealed in a video that went public, prompting radio stations across the country to drop his music from their playlists.
At number three, the economy tied with Biden GOP stimulus discussions and the stock market. The Biden administration and the Democrats in Congress plan to go forward with their $1.9 trillion COVID-19 economic stimulus plan with or without Republican support.
The main question being not so much about the amount of money being invested into the program, but to whom it will actually be allocated so it isn't wasted on those who don't really need the help. Looking at the stock market, the disruption and concern sparked by last week's GameStop debacle remains a hot topic of conversation when it comes to American economic stability and the vulnerability of our markets to digital era tampering by bad actors at home and abroad.
At number two this week, COVID-19, vaccines, variants, and stats. The rollout and distribution of vaccines and inoculations continues to be a prime subject of discussion in the talk media, with growing concern on the part of doctors to get the job done before the accelerating emergence of COVID-19 variants makes it an increasingly challenging task.
Of course, widespread fear and distrust of the vaccines, amplified by the anti-vaxxer movement, all add to the difficulties being faced in creating a level of immunity that will relegate the pandemic that has upended our lives to the rear view mirror. At the time of this program's final production on Friday, there are 26.7 million reported cases of COVID-19 in the United States, and the death count has surpassed 456,000.
And at number one this week, a three-way tie between the forthcoming impeachment trial, the ongoing insurrection investigation, and the GOP Cheney-Green issues. Washington and the nation prepare for yet another spectacle in the political circus as the Senate impeachment trial of former President Donald Trump looms as next week's big reality show.
This week's GOP reckoning as to which fork in the road it'll take going forward has been played out to the dramatic max with its votes this past week on what to do with U.S. Senator Liz Cheney and U.S. Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene. The future of the Republican Party and the level of the federal government's functionality in mitigating the wide array of crises facing the nation literally hang in the balance. Thank you, Kevin Casey from Talkers Magazine. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap. Thank you, Kevin Casey from Talkers Magazine. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap. COVID-19 defines the very era in which we are very much still living. We're joined now by our medical correspondent, Dr. Dahlia Wax, heard daily on her nationally syndicated talk show on the Genesis Communications Network. Dr. Dahlia Wax, I understand that you are halfway, at least, on your way to being vaccinated. Tell us about it.
Great. Yeah. So I received my vaccine on Saturday, the first dose of Pfizer. It was painless going in, and the health district managed it so efficiently, social distancing. And then it kind of smarted a little bit more later that day. Arm got sore. Then I started to get some body aches. I got nauseated. But I overcame the symptoms within about 36 hours. And hopefully I get my next shot in the next few weeks. Because with Pfizer, you have to get them 21 days apart for now.
How subject to nausea have you been in your life? Because nausea is something that scares me. I hate being nauseous and being dizzy and all that. It's like the one thing I go, oh, gosh. And so how severe was the nausea?
It wasn't that severe. I took a little Coca-Cola. That seemed to help. And nausea isn't a very common side effect. But for me, I think I'm a lot like you, where when something puts me off a little bit and I feel off-putting, I'll get nausea. But it was mild enough where I could take some Coca-Cola and, you know, it ended up going away.
I see. And from what you understand, is this common or rare? In other words, what are they finding now that we're getting larger and larger samples of numbers of people doing it? Because a lot of people are worried and they're frightened. And you know, sometimes, you know, a little bit of nausea and a little bit of pain could be interpreted as, oh, my God, I'm dying, you know.
Well, to me, I thought it was a good sign because I had heard of the anaphylaxis, and in Norway they were investigating possible deaths, which they ruled out. So for me, when all I had was some nausea and some body aches, I was like, hallelujah, this was I'm lucky. But I was more relieved because the shot was so painless going in that I was afraid it didn't take, that maybe she didn't inject it all the way into the muscle. So once I started to feel some of the aches, then I know it was doing what it's supposed to, starting to incite my immune system, starting to prepare them, that they have to get ready for those spike proteins it's going to make. So I was more relieved that it was starting to work. And I think those signs are a good sign, as long as it doesn't take you down and make you have to leave work for a good number of days. Which is, by the way, why, Michael, we are recommending that when you do get your vaccine, do it on your Friday so that you do have a couple days to recover if you need to.
I saw the photo and I saw a video clip of you receiving the shot, and you were a champ. Of course, you're known for throwing your body into your work in blood drives. And I mean, you are, folks listening to this, she's not only a well-respected physician, but she's also a character. And and you have promoted a number of initiatives, particularly blood donation. You've been so involved in that across the country on a level that they should give you many awards. But you didn't seem fazed at all by the needle going in. And I have to salute you for that. So what's next? You say you have a second one coming?
Yes, thank you. Yes, so I am supposed to get my next shot in the next few weeks. And thank you for that, because, you know, when I was in medical school, I didn't want to be one of those doctors that sat on their high horse saying, do as I say, not as I do. If I'm going to tell women to get a mammogram or tell people to get a colonoscopy or tell people to become vaccinated, then I need to walk the walk. And so same thing with donating blood. And so I'm whether I have an MD or not, I'm still, you know, here on this earth trying to help others. And so I want to promote good health. I want to promote people helping others. And so, you know, if taking a vaccine that scares people will calm some people's fears, then I'm going to do it.
Well, I got to tell you, you know, when people see a doctor actually being human, it makes you feel better. You know, I've had a number of doctors, and some doctors are very, very like regular people, and they talk about, yeah, I was on that drug or I had that issue and whatever. And then others, you know, there's a wall around them that I don't know, for whatever reason. And there are good reasons and some not so good reasons for being close to patients, but to present yourself as human might be too much for some doctors to bear. Tell us quickly, what is your assessment of the state of the variants? Are you worried? Are you less worried? What's going on in your mind about the variants?
Well, you know, thank you. I mean, after the death of the Alabama man, I believe he was from Alabama, who had died after the UK receiving the UK variant. It is concerning. The variants are different. It shows that the virus is changing. The E484K mutation that the Brazilian and the South African strains have seem to make it more infectious and could infect more people. Maybe not be more lethal, but infect more people. So I think Pfizer, Moderna, which it sounds like they're doing, need to step up their game and make sure they have boosters. And we need to approach this coronavirus and this COVID-19 like we do with the flu, expecting that we're going to need to continually update our vaccines and continually revaccinate. It's going to be hard to get everybody on board because we still have most of the population not excited and enthusiastic about the vaccine, but this is not something that's going to go away quickly. And if we want to start to see normalcy, we're going to have to approach this like we do flu and anything else. Try to avoid it, vaccinate, but learn to live with it.
That's our medical correspondent, Dr. Dahlia Wax of the Genesis Communications Network, one of the leading physicians heard on talk radio in America today. Coming up next, a trip down to Trumpland, USA, Palm Beach, Florida, and a visit with Joyce Kaufman of WFTL. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap. Bernadette Duncan spent 26 years as a radio talk show producer. In her new book, Yappy Days, Behind the Scenes with Newsers, Schmoozers, Boozers, and Losers, she shares her adventures in the trenches of big-time talk radio during the changing backdrop of America's pre- and post-9/11 realities. This exciting story includes Bernadette's impressions of the quirky celebrity talk show hosts whom she served during her career: Larry King, Sally Jesse Raphael, Gil Gross, Tom Snyder, Lou Dobbs, Charles Osgood, and more. It's full of anecdotes about hundreds of high-profile guests from media, show business, and politics, also quirky, ego-driven, and neurotic. Yappy Days, Behind the Scenes with Newsers, Schmoozers, Boozers, and Losers, an analytical look at the media, journalism, and the complex nature of ego. Get it now at Amazon.com. Continuing now with the Michael Harrison Wrap, let's head down to Palm Beach County, Florida, the home of Donald Trump, and a visit with one of his most ardent supporters in talk radio, Joyce Kaufman of radio station WFTL. So Joyce, I haven't talked to you since the election or since some of the post-election events. You're down in Florida. A couple of things I'd love to run by you. The first one is, what's the atmosphere in Palm Beach with suddenly this high-profile resident being in your midst?
Well, you either love Donald Trump or you hate Donald Trump. And it's pretty much that way here in Palm Beach as well. You have the Democrat establishment, which is torturing him. They don't want him to be able to live at Mar-a-Lago. And then you have the diehards like me who line up when his motorcade passes by on his way home. So pretty much the same way it is the rest of the country.
So there is a presence, though. I mean, he travels with a motorcade. And are you exaggerating, or do you actually know what the tempo of his appearances happened to be?
He stayed in pretty much the first week that he was back home. There were very few sightings, but subsequently he's starting to venture out. And of course, he's now got the office of the former president, 45. So there's a lot of communication coming out of the Trump camp. And that includes some appearances. Not much, but I think he's going to be raring to go any day now.
I hear that there are like planes flying across the bay in front of his, you know, Mar-a-Lago with signs, you know, dangling from them. And is there an evident expression of the controversy that you described in terms of signs and things of that nature?
Well, the signs are actually almost all pro-Trump. There was a group of Chinese Americans who had a plane going back and forth across the area where Mar-a-Lago is located, and it just said, "We love you, we're behind you, we stick with you." And there's been a couple of those banner planes always lauding the president. What you do see in terms of controversial is, you know, some of the protesters are still out there blaming him for everything from COVID-19 to, you know, the economy.
So let's switch gears here now to, as you and I are talking, it is the afternoon of Thursday, February 4th, and the Republicans have voted to let Liz Cheney keep her her positions on the committees and all of that. But they also are giving a pass to Marjorie Taylor Greene. And the schism between Liz Cheney and Marjorie Taylor Greene is sort of very symbolic of what's going on in terms of the Republican Party going forward. Where do you stand on that?
Well, I'll tell you where I stand. First and foremost, Liz Cheney should have been bounced out of leadership. She is a poor example of what the Republican Party needs to do now. You know, the whole impeachment, the idea of an impeachment after a president has left office, not only is it unconstitutional, but it's immoral. And for leadership to have taken that position, and she took it quite vociferously, tells me that they should not be leading the party. They do not reflect the party. Now, the fact that they had a secret vote is the proof, because the caucus doesn't want to be, you know, out front about how they voted to keep her, because they'll lose back at home in any tight election. So I'm not a Liz Cheney supporter. I never was. I don't know who Marjorie Taylor Greene was. I don't know her from Adam. If she made her apology about QAnon and it was accepted, then I guess the Republicans are good to go. You know, never did we demand censure for Ilhan Omar with all her anti-Semitic comments, or Rashida Tlaib, who referred to the president as an MF. So why does she need to be censured when they get away with that stuff all the time? Nancy Pelosi told people to, you know, called stormtroopers to the police when they were out there in Portland, but now she's got them guarding the Capitol building. I'm just so sick of the double standard, Michael.
If there wasn't a double standard, had they censured the other the Democrats, would you feel differently? Is it a matter of fairness, or do you think that people should just not necessarily have their opinions, no matter how outrageous, controversial, or even radical they are, being a reason for them being shut up or shut out?
Well, we don't even know Marjorie Taylor Greene's opinions yet. She's been on Capitol Hill for a month. Mm-hmm. You know, now, when Steve King made some outrageous comments, and Steve was a personal friend of mine, but he had a habit of not using any filter when he spoke at times. And he was properly removed from committees by the Republicans. I had no problem with that, even though it was painful to watch him go down in that manner. But I don't know anything about this woman, and nor does anybody else, except what the same media who ignored, you know, Maxine Waters telling people to get in the administration representatives' faces in public places. That was not a news story, but all of a sudden the story that she believed some of these QAnon stuff. Michael, I got to be honest with you. I do this for a living, and I don't know what the hell QAnon is.
Well, I mean, some people will interpret that as you dodging it, and others will interpret it as you being quite honest. I mean, you have an idea of what QAnon is at this point, I assume.
I do, but I don't know what she believed that they say or what she heard that they say. I know nothing except what the media has told me, which is she's a QAnon person. Meanwhile, she got 75% of the vote in her district. I don't know many people who won landslides like that.
Especially since the state went not by a lot, but in the other direction. So that certainly is extremely, extremely interesting. Putting that aside, where do you think the impeachment's going to go in terms of next week when it becomes a trial?
It's just an opportunity for them to showboat. There's not going to be an actual impeachment. And we both know that the purpose of impeachment is to remove a president or an officer or a judge. It is not to make sure they never run again. That is the second part of a clause that they're violating. This is just for show. And I'm just so tired of all this cancel culture, even up into and including the president of the United States. You can't say anything. You can't think differently without immediately someone coming down. And if people in talk radio aren't properly alarmed right now and see the chilling effect this is having on our industry, they better wake up, because it's coming soon to a neighborhood near us.
That's Joyce Kaufman, who's heard daily on Powerhouse WFTL that blankets the South Florida communities of Miami, Fort Lauderdale, and the Palm Beaches. Of course, at this point, we know that the Democrats have subsequently taken the lead and stripped Marjorie Taylor Greene of her congressional committee assignments. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap. Let's pivot now to the nation's capital and a conversation with our Washington correspondent, Victoria Jones, executive director of the D.C. Radio Company. Victoria Jones, I mean, following the new White House press briefings and the White House press secretary, Jen Psaki, is interesting to me. I know it must be interesting to you because before you were the executive director of the D.C. radio company, you spent more than a dozen years as a senior White House correspondent for a national news agency. So you know what it is to be in those rooms and ask those questions. What's the latest on, it seemed like a mini flap or a brouhaha, if you will, about reporters being told by Jen Psaki that they have to have their questions submitted in advance?
Yeah, well, there were a couple of interesting developments on the whole briefings. There's that. And what is not quite clear, really, is it the specific questions or is it the topic area? And if it's the specific questions like, does Michael Harrison have black hair, brown hair, or gray hair? Well, that's too specific. Or, you know, are you going to ask a question about Michael Harrison's hair? That's a topic area. Because if it's that, then you want to be prepared to talk about it. That's reasonable. Like if I went into the press area and said, I'm going to ask about Iran today. That's reasonable because actually I want them to be prepared to have some background information on Iran. Otherwise, I might ask the question and they'll say, we'll get back to you. Well, that's a waste of time.
I see. So has it hasn't become apparent yet whether it was the area or the specific question at this point? In other words, has that issue been lost in the shuffle of just the passing days?
It's been a bit lost in the shuffle, and it's been consumed by something even more interesting to press briefing watchers, which is something else Jen Psaki did this week, which was she reverted to a tradition going back to 1946, which is at the end of the press briefings. The press briefings, of course, this is the press's room. At the end of the press briefing, the press secretary looks to the Associated Press reporter, print reporter sitting in the front row, and that press reporter says, thank you, Jen. And then the press secretary walks out. The press secretary does not end the briefing. The AP reporter decides on it.
The AP reporter?
Yeah.
And this was something you said that goes back decades to an earlier time?
It's always been that way. At one point it was UPI, but it's generally been AP. In other words, it's the most senior wire reporter in the room. And what would happen is that the AP reporter, before texts, would crane their necks looking around the room to make sure that everybody had got their questions in. And you know, the press secretary would be looking down at that person and sort of exchanging looks to make sure. And, you know, if they were going really long, like Jeff Ernest's briefings, Josh Earnest, when he was press secretary, he was going for an hour and 15 minutes, but he was fine with that. And then eventually the AP reporter would say, thank you, Josh.
What about the fact that there are so few people in the room compared to the way it used to be before COVID? Has that affected the ability of people to get a question off and how they go about selecting people to ask questions? And where are the other people located? In other words, how do they determine who gets into what's obviously rare space?
Well, so far, in terms of getting questions in, those in the room, and it's done on a rotating basis, who gets to go and be in the briefing. That's decided by the White House Correspondents Association. It's on a rota, whether you get to go to the briefing. Everybody is getting a question in. Jen Psaki is taking a question from everybody. Now, that, of course, could change. she might start deciding she's not going to take a question from everybody. And that's her prerogative.
But so that really undoes the earlier question of having the questions submitted in advance if everybody gets a question, doesn't it?
Precisely. And that's one of the reasons why reporters were saying, why are they doing this? Why do they want to know what topic areas and what we're going to ask? This is one of the reasons why there were ructions and ripples going through the press.
That's the executive director of the DC Radio Company and our Washington correspondent, Victoria Jones. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap. Each week, Talkers Magazine publishes a list of the most talked about people of the week on talk media shows across America, in addition to the 10 most talked about topics and stories that Kevin Casey and I run down at the beginning of each program. This week's people list is as follows. At number 10, we have quarterback Tom Brady of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who's going for a record-breaking 10th time in the Super Bowl. This weekend, of course, is Super Bowl weekend. At number 9, tying into the story, the big story about U.S. relations with China and Russia, we have Vladimir Putin and Xi Jinping tied at number 9. Well, it looks like the movement to oust him through a recall is gaining momentum out in California. Not the first time in recent history that we've seen that happen. It happened to Democrat Gray Davis, which opened the door for Republican Arnold Schwarzenegger to become governor. Gavin Newsom is running into problems. People are not happy with the way he's handled the COVID-19 pandemic in the Golden State. At number 7, Morgan Wallen, a country star who has lost a lot of radio airplay on country radio this past week for remarks that were captured on video in which he showed quite a temper, a nasty streak, and the ability to let loose a racial slur. And that was one of several stories this week that contributed to race relations being one of the perennial top 10 topics of the week. At number 6, we have Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. At number 5, we have Mitch McConnell, Kevin McCarthy, and Matt Gaetz. Number 4, Dr. Tony Fauci, fourth most talked about level in terms of conversation in the talk media universe. And number 3, and we've been talking about it on the program, Liz Cheney and Marjorie Taylor Greene. Number 2 this week is Donald Trump, the 45th president of the United States. And I suspect, and I'm not the only one, that we'll be talking about Donald Trump for a long time to come, especially if he specifically seeks that kind of post-presidency high-profile attention. Who knows? Perhaps as part of his plan to seek pre-presidency attention if he has the opportunity to run again. And at number 1, we have the 46th president of the United States, Joseph R. Biden Jr. Coming up next, another look at Wall Street and the aftermath of the GameStop debacle. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap.
Attention homeowners, spending more time around your house means you're putting more stress on major appliances that keep your home running. Like many Americans, a major breakdown could be very costly during these uncertain times. AC unit goes, that's $4,500. Water heater breaks, $1,500. When you own a home, it's always something. If you have a home warranty, those repairs could cost you nothing. A Home Service Club warranty pays for the repair or replacement of your home appliances and systems when they break down, even from normal wear and tear. For about $1 a day, you can cover your home appliances and systems. It's not a question of if they'll break down, it's when. If you call now, you'll get your first month free and $75 off your first year. Make home appliance repairs one less thing to worry about. Call 800-259-1604 now for your free quote, free first month, and $75 off your first year. 800-259-1604 now. That's 800-259-1604. Again, 800-259-1604.
Continuing now with the Michael Harrison Wrap as we discuss the hottest topics of the past week in the national conversation. Wall Street is still shook up over the big GameStop debacle of a few weeks ago that revealed just how vulnerable the nation's stock market is to technological manipulation that can cause wild price fluctuation and instability. I interviewed law professor Steve Weissman of Bentley University in Boston and the founder of the amazing website Scamicide.com about it on this week's installment of my podcast, The Michael Harrison Interview, at MHInterview.com. Here's an excerpt from that conversation. GameStop. The store was in trouble because they were based on an old paradigm, sort of like Blockbuster. Is that what you're saying? Because now people are getting
the
stuff.
Yes, I think that actually that is the best comparison that you can find. Is they were Blockbuster. Blockbuster was, you know, at one time huge, renting out DVDs. However, when things shifted to go online, they didn't keep up, and in fact, that is, interestingly enough, there was one of the guys who was the hero in the movie The Big Short, actually was buying up stock in GameStop because he wanted to try and influence, get people on the board so that they would shift to a more of an online presence. But yeah, GameStop was in trouble. They were their business model was not going to be effective, and their value was dropping.
Okay, so the idea that hedge funds, which are professional and understand how things are done and are real pros at this, or at least as it was until a week or two ago, it would not be unreasonable for them to take short bets on GameStop based upon obvious trends.
Why everything that had ever been done before a couple of weeks ago, it was a great move.
Okay. Now, I was going to mention the movie The Big Short, which I watched on an airplane, and I wish I had seen it more recently and paid more attention to it, because that's another area that not everybody totally understands. You hear the term, you know, to bet short. First of all, the word bet makes my skin crawl when it has to do with investments, because that brings up a whole other area of ignorance and greed.
Well, I think we should talk about that.
Okay. So let's talk about the word bet, and let's talk about the word short. What do they mean?
Okay. And first of all, this is one of the things. My hero for investing is Warren Buffett. He invests in stocks of companies that he think are going to be good companies and going to grow. That's the traditional kind of investor, and you know, smart people can do your research and make money. One of the things that he has always been critical of is what are called derivatives. And we hear that term thrown out a lot, and a lot of times people don't understand what it is. Instead of investing in a company, and here's where you're picking up on the word bet. To me, it's gambling. It is betting. A derivative is not a direct investment in a company. It's a bet that something is going to happen. So a derivative is there are S&P futures derivatives, meaning you are betting if the stock market is going to go up or down. And so that's what we're having here. When someone is shorting a stock, they're not investing in the company. What they are doing is betting that the company is going to go down. And so how shorting technically works is you borrow shares. You're borrowing shares of the stock for a fee. And then you sell them ideally at a high price and then buy them back at a lower price that you figure it's going to drop at, and you make money. And so in short selling, you lose money if the stock goes up, and potentially, if your loss is going to be almost infinite if the stock keeps going up. So there are so many types of investments that I think truly aren't investments, but are just a more sophisticated form of gambling. And that's what we're seeing happen with GameStop.
Now, I'm not quite clear how you make money, though. Shorting, you borrow stock, you pay money to borrow stock.
You're not even buying the stock. You are, you're borrowing the shares, and you pay a fee for that. And then you're going to sell them at a high price, then buy them back. You're agreeing to buy them back at a low price. So when it goes down, when you hit that particular number that you want, you're going to be making money because you sold it at a high price and buy it at a low price. Now, this is one of the things that is also going to manipulate what happens with GameStop and others. When you short a stock, you pick a particular date. And so let's say you picked January 29th, that is going to be the day that you're going to buy it back. Now, if the stock has gone way up and you're betting that it's going to go down, you're going to be stuck. And so what some of these hedge funds are actually doing is, rather than take the losses, they will buy the stock itself now, and that increases the value of the stock, which makes other people holding hedge short positions hurt even more. So it's just a vicious cycle.
Is there a ratio that makes mathematical sense between how much of this buying the stock and selling the stock actually impacts the value of the stock on the open market? Is that a consistent thing, or does that fluctuate based on some non-tangible factors that I wouldn't understand? I don't even know if my question is understandable.
It's always going to fluctuate. Mm-hmm. But it reminds me of another thing, is that there, a lot of times people aren't making the decisions. Information and critical information fast is how Wall Street now makes its decisions. Once again, it's not even brokers. It's algorithms that the brokers have created to recognize situations and opportunities. And a matter of split seconds can mean something. So here's something a lot of people don't recognize. The Securities and Exchange Commission has a service called EDGAR, and I'm not sure what the acronym is for, but what it does is that has the most up-to-date reports by companies of all of the situations that are going on with the company, and people make investment decisions based on this. Well, the SEC, if you are a big hedge fund or investment company, you will purchase EDGAR to when reports come in, EDGAR will send you the report as soon as it comes out. It will then be, of course, EDGAR, the SEC will also post those EDGAR reports on the EDGAR website. And the difference between someone getting it ahead of time and someone getting it by going to the website can be as long as a minute, it can be as little as 10 seconds. But for a computer to take that information and make an immediate decision can mean millions of dollars. And so people who pay for that split second are going to do better than the average investor. And the average investor doesn't know this.
Now, because the computers can operate at multiple times the speed of the human brain and the human hand, we really have these algorithms now are creating a situation in which computers are making financial decisions with computers. Computers are selling computers.
Oh, yeah. It's crazy. We had it in 2010. There was something called the flash crash, where all of a sudden the market dropped by about 1,000 points in about 10 minutes. And eventually they found out what this was caused by. And it was caused by, and it sounded like a joke, the proverbial kid in his parents' basement in London. And what he was doing was, again, he was betting. He was betting on S&P Standard & Poor's futures. He was betting on whether the Standard & Poor's index was going to go up or down. But he wanted to rig it. And so the way he rigged it is he flooded his computers, flooded the markets with sell orders. Now, that was going to affect the price, because if a lot of people are selling, the price will go down. But he didn't complete his orders. He pulled those back, because what he was trying to do was not really sell a lot of stuff. He was trying to just change the market so he could buy at a really good rate. However, the computers, all they saw was an instantaneous sell order. They responded before he even withdrew the order, and it threw the market askew, which also goes to show you this is a kid in the basement. It shows how susceptible our financial system is to being manipulated.
Okay, this goes back.
If we thought the Russians could play around with social media, what they could do to our economy by messing around with the algorithms that we have that are ruling the investment world, that is really scary stuff.
That's law professor Steve Weissman of Bentley University in Boston and the website scamaside.com talking about the GameStop debacle. If you'd like to hear the entire conversation between us, please visit mhinterview.com and check out my podcast. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap. Okay, we have time for one more. It's Super Bowl weekend. Let's catch up with one of the legends of New York City radio, WFAN sports talker Richard Neer. So, Richard, this really turned into a really interesting Super Bowl, and I hear people talking about it, and of course, we're tracking it in the top 10 topics of the week as we have the countdown to the Super Bowl. This one, it's like the moon and the stars lined up to give it like 12 different storylines, and a tremendous amount of interest is being generated. What are your thoughts?
Well, it's a miraculous season for the National Football League, no matter what. I mean, getting through an entire 16-game schedule. Yeah, they had some blips where, Denver was without a quarterback for one game. Pittsburgh game was postponed for a week and wound up being played on a Wednesday. So there were all kinds of strange happenings because of the situation we're all in. And yet they got all the games in. The playoff games, some of them were really, really compelling football games. Some weren't, but that's the way it usually is. And you've got a great Super Bowl, which pits Tom Brady, considered to be the greatest of all time, versus Patrick Mahomes, the young quarterback who might be on his way to being the greatest of all time.
Who do you think needs this game more for their legacy going forward, Brady or Mahomes?
Six Super Bowl rings is something that it's the ultimate team sport. So Mahomes can be great through his career and never reach six.
And for people who are neither fans of the Bucs or fans of the Chiefs and are just watching this objectively, you know, from the distance of, okay, let's see what this is about. What do you think the sentiment is among the fans and among the, you know, not even the fans, among the public, because everybody gets involved in this, about the young guy, the real young guy versus the real old guy?
Tom Brady is a very polarizing figure. The people who love him look at his record and how successful he's been and how clean his image has been up to a point. And that's where the hatred comes in because of Deflategate, where allegedly
jealousy.
Footballs were deflated at his request. Now, that was never proven, but most people believe that he had something to do with it. So there's a little bit of that in there. There's a little bit of politics in there with the MAGA hat. There's a little bit of not going to the White House when they won their last Super Bowl. So, you know, people on both sides of the political aisle might have a problem with him. There's the envy factor, the fact that he's made so much money. He's such a champion. Not a bad-looking guy either. And he is married to a supermodel, and he's got some great kids. So,
wow.
You know, there's that part of it, too.
I mean, and the list actually goes on. And then there's also the intrigue about the guy that breaks away from the team and the argument of, was it the team? Was it the coach? Was it him? It's endless. But I find, you know, in conclusion, I would say, and I'd like to know what you think, that a lot of the Tom Brady hatred that has existed, and a lot of the fans of the Pats who are mad at him for leaving for whatever reason, as that's changed, I find the sentiment seems to be swinging toward Brady and not away from him. What do you think?
The argument that people were having before this season started was the Patriots' success attributable to the great Bill Belichick and his schemes and his way of putting the team together, or it was just because they had the greatest quarterback ever captaining the team. So that argument, at least in the short term, has been won by Tom Brady. He's in the Super Bowl for the 10th time. Belichick is on the sidelines.
That's legendary WFAN New York sports talk radio personality Richard Neer. He's also a prolific author. Visit his website at richardneer.com. And that brings us to the conclusion of this latest installment of our show. This has been the Michael Harrison Wrap, looking back at this past week of Monday, February 1st through Friday, February 5th, 2021. Looking ahead, I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about next week, including the ever-lurking unknown factor, that unanticipated surprise story that can take the national conversation spinning off in a totally unexpected direction. Boy, do we live in interesting times. I can be reached via email at michael@talkers.com. My podcast, The Michael Harrison Interview, can be heard at mhinterview.com. And if you want to stay in touch with the inner workings of the talk media industry, please visit talkers.com. And that does it for this week's installment of The Michael Harrison Wrap, an overview of the national conversation. Our producer is Matthew B. Harrison. Thank you for listening.
The Michael Harrison Wrap is a production of Good Phone Communications in conjunction with Talkers Magazine and Talk Media Network. Copyright 2021, all rights reserved.